Welcome to the workshop, Surviving My Emotions. This is a workshop that I personally chose to secretary today because these two people that I chose to speak at this topic are special to me. But I'll get a chance to introduce you later, but right now I'm going to do Chris. Chris and I met our early years of recovery. We did service work. We used to carry a speaker's jam down in Wildwood, New Jersey every year for 5 years straight. We piling cars together. We didn't know each other, but we hung together, and we helped each other stay clean no matter what. And we carried the message to the addict that still suffered and the ones that didn't know they were suffering. The first time I heard Chris tell his story was in Wildwood. And what he shared was not only humorous, but it hit me in my gut because I could immediately identify with the pain of one addict. This is why I chose him for this topic. I'm not into telling people stories, but I will tell you that you are about to be enlightened. And without any further ado, I give you Chris W. Thank you.
I'm an addict named Chris. Trying not to look nervous. Like when my mom used to try to find out which one of us did something wrong, she'd just look at me. My face going to tell the whole story, pretty much. In our literature, it said, rest assured what's happening on the inside will become evident on the outside to others. So I'm nervous. I'm looking around the room. There's a lot of people in here that I don't know, but it's just enough people in here I do know that I got to tell the truth. Damn. Just one time I'm going to come to the podium and be like, look, when Rafael Edmonds messed up my money, when I came into the, you know what I'm saying, that's not my story. You know, I ain't never been in jail or come close. The closest I came to committing a crime, stealing a car, was maybe taking an antenna, you know. I don't have one of those menace to society stories. I was more like a nuisance to the neighborhood type of thing. I've been fortunate enough in this journey to have been asked to share my story. And I'm always honored, you know, when somebody thinks enough of my recovery to ask me to share, whether it's a convention, treatment center, you know, meeting. Topics like why am I here was the first topic. More will be revealed, choices, uncover, discover, recover, mm-hmm. You know, and then now this topic is the five of my emotions. All those topics that I thought I'd never be worthy of sharing on January 23rd, 1999, when I woke up in treatment. It's the second in D, it's one of the largest shelters in the D.C. area. I was in a treatment center in there, and I woke up, ate breakfast, and we were required to go to the 12-step meeting. I went to a Narcotics Anonymous meeting and stayed throughout the 90-minute meeting, closed with the Serenity Prayer, got on the bus, went back to the old neighborhood, and I used. And I didn't understand why, you know. But what I've learned in this process is that my thoughts carry over into my emotions. You know, I was thinking about the fact that, dang, I thought, all the accomplishment, who's who among American high school students, honor roll, altar boy, teen club president, the church. Here I am living in a shelter in D.C., you know. So when I do that, my emotions try to fulfill those needs of mine by any means necessary. So I was feeling bad about that, so I had to make up for it. And the only thing I knew that could make me feel better at that time was drugs. So I went back to the neighborhood, and I used, and I went on a two-day binge. It wasn't a long binge. It's kind of hard to go on a long binge with short money. I had $8, you know what I'm saying? $8. I told you, I'm living in a shelter. Do I need to start over? I'm in a shelter. I ain't had no hold. It wasn't like I took a paycheck and used. I saved up $8, I bought a dime, I went over to dude's house, and I split it between me, him, and his girlfriend. It was a miracle that I was able to go on a two-day binge, you know, let alone a week. But I went on a two-day binge, and And the night before I went to bed, I found myself, you know, again, homeless, hopeless, you know. I said, God, help me. And I spent the night in an abandoned car, and the next day I didn't want to use, which wasn't out of the ordinary. Most of the time when I ran out of money and didn't have any more drugs, I wanted to surrender. You know, just the order of things. But it was different this time, you know, because I reached out. I called two people. I called a guy in this program who's now my sponsor and another gentleman I had met in this process. And the other guy, who's, I don't know if he's here, he's gay, right? And he told me, he said, look, go to a meeting. You can meet me at my job. We worked at a restaurant. You can eat. You can stay at my house that night, and then we'll get you in a program. He was gay. Called a guy that was my sponsor. Told him, hey, look, such and such said, you know, go to a meeting, meet him at his job. He's going to feed me. I can stay at his house. He said, but I said, but, you know, the guy gay. He's like, we'll sleep in the car. That's not what I was, you know, like. So anyway, that's what I did. And he allowed me to stay at his home. The next day, he took me to my parents' house. My dad drove me to a treatment center. And somewhere between getting in the car at my parents' house and getting to the doors of the treatment center, the desire to use one more time came over me again. And I told you, my emotions, that's all I needed to do. My thoughts said use, use, you know. So I got to the treatment center. I went in there and I sat down and I had all the information. The lady said, well, you have all the stuff, so you can come in right now. I was like, cool. What I'm going to do is go get my stuff and I'll be back up. She said, somebody can bring all that to you. I was like, yeah, you know, but I've been in and out of shelters. They don't know exactly what I need. I got stuff in bags and all that. She's like, hey, you can write it down. I'm like, but I need to let my parents and them know that I'm going, hey, you can call them. Damn. Is she a psychic? You know, like, I didn't know she was suffering from the same disease I was suffering from. And I went to give her one more bus. And she was like, look, Chris, if you're here, stay here. But the emotion to use was there. But the desire to get clean was even greater. Just that time, you know. I've always been open to the idea of stop using. I just was never willing to do what it took to stop. It says in our literature, just for today, it says open-mindedness without willingness, however, will get us nowhere. We must be willing to do whatever is necessary to recover. We never know when the time will come when we must put forth all the effort and strength we have just to stay clean. You know, I stayed January 26, 1999, and I haven't found it necessary to use since then. You know, woke up the next morning, man. I'm so grateful for that lady for kind of convincing me to stay. And I couldn't wait till she came to work to tell her thank you. And she never came back because that was her last day on the job. I'm like, why me? You know, stayed in that treatment center 6 months, moved into a transitional house, got some clean time, got a little job, you know, and I think it was, Marvin Gaye that says, when I get that feeling, I want some sexual healing. Come on. Woo! And at that time, the going rate for sexual healing was somewhere between $10 and $25. So I started tricking. It's my story. I started tricking, and I'm living in a transitional house. You know, and but I didn't see it as tricking, you know, because we would go inside, she had a house, go over there, I would loan her a couple of dollars to have sex with me, you know, and I went over there one day, one of them days I was feeling a little down, and when I got there, she was cleaning the ash bowl, which means she didn't have any left, and she's like, well, look, give me the $10, I need to get something from the guy before he leaves out front, and I told her, get two. And she was put on her shoestrings, and she was taking off. I was like, look, come on now, hurry up. I ain't got high in like 9 months now. She said, oh, baby, you don't want to do that, and gave me the $20 back. A geeking addict giving me the money back. You know, it ain't all add up until I started just going back through the whole, you know, story. And got with my sponsor. We went back to the first step, because that's a first step issue when you're thinking about using like that. Progressed through the process, went on to independent living, got me a little apartment in a recovery house, and then moved, got my own place, and life just started getting better and better. I got about 2.5 years clean. I was in service. I got a sponsor. I'm working steps. They had asked me to share. I was able to share my story now, and something still was missing. What happened was this guy, it was two guys when I was first got clean. They would pick me up from my house, and they would take me to NA meetings, and they would drop me off. And because I was too ashamed to raise my hand in meetings, I would talk with them in the car afterwards for like 30, 45 minutes. And one of them passed away. And I went to his funeral. That was the first NA funeral I had gone to. And I had wore the suit I had got from the treatment place, you know, but it was jazzy. I had my little $25 car I had bought from the auction. And I went to the funeral, and I left there, and I was feeling a little down. And I needed something to fill that void, you know. Couldn't trick. Not because I didn't want to. It was daytime. I didn't want none of y'all to see me tricking. You trick at night. You got to trick at night after the sun goes down. It was like 3 o'clock in the afternoon. I went to Giant, and there she was, walking across the parking lot. I waved. She waved back. She was fine, man. She was just... My friends would say, man, she reminded me of Halle Berry. She looked something like anybody that resembles Halle Berry, you know. And she was so fine, man, and gave her my number. And we went out. That was like a Thursday. I think by Sunday, I was like, I wonder if the baby going to have my eyes. I don't know about y'all. I was looking for love when I got here, you know. But like I said, my emotions... We'll try to get that need any way possible. It'll take lust, infatuation, all that, and make it love. You know, and you get in this relationship, unhealthy relationship, you know. And but I stayed in it because it was this part of me that just didn't feel that I was going to ever meet anybody worth, you know, the fact that somebody had interest in me. I just had to stay no matter how bad it was, because this chance may not come again. It took me back to when I was in school, at the end of school, I think it was camp. In the camp, we would go to King's Dominion on a field trip. And I don't know about y'all, when we did that, when we get to the park, people would couple off. I don't know what that was about, you know. And we coupled off. Well, we didn't. I usually was stuck with somebody that was left over, right? And it just so happened on this time, the girl that was left over was somebody that I had... Like, anyway, she was taller than me, so I wasn't going to approach her. But I was all she had this day, so I was good, right? We going through the park. I'm winning her, you know, winning stuffed animals, all that. So we get to the roller coaster. I'm like, this is going to be my end. She's going to get scared. I know she's going to lean on me. We're going to be boyfriend and girlfriend. I had mapped the whole thing out, right? So as we winding through the line, I look up front, and they got this caricature there standing there. Come on, sir. They got this character thing up there with this ruler in his hand, right? So, while everybody's like, you know, I'm going to ride, I'm going to have my hands up, I'm going to do this, I'm gonna do that. I'm like, is that Fred Flintstone or Barney Rubble up there? get to the front of the line, it was Dino. So you know what the dude said to me, you can't ride, I'm sorry, you're not tall enough, sir. Can you step off to the... You can't ride. My response, I ain't want to ride anyway. You know. She got on with some other leftover dude. You know. And but what that did for me was it set up a thought pattern that I would never measure up. So anytime I saw down the line where I wasn't going to measure up, I would get out of line. That's how I try to survive my emotions. I just avoid anyone's that didn't make me feel good. You know, and by doing that, I created even more problems on top of that, you know. And so anyway, I'm in this relationship. It's drama. And we dating off and on, and put putting each other out of cars, cutting up drawers, and, you know, all the stuff you do when you're in love. Kicking each other out, hanging up on phones, stalking and all this. And what happened was, I was like, man, I got to do something different, because this relationship is not going too great. So anyway, we got married. The basic text says, we faced two choices. Either we suffered the pain of withdrawal or took more drugs. So, I was trying to OD off her ass. Not going to break up. I may see her with somebody else. You know, and we get married. She's pregnant. Found out it's a boy. You know, I don't have any kids. She don't have any kids. And my son going to play basketball. He ain't going to do like me, you know, and all this old stuff. And the baby died. 2 months later, the marriage got annulled. You know, emotions I had never, never, ever faced clean. You know, and but what I did was, by this time in this journey, I had a sponsor that had guided me through the steps and taught me enough spiritual principles that I had other options. Yeah. You know, I called people and asked them how did they get through things they had gone through. And it says, I can't, but we can. And I was able to get through that clean, you know. And my life has just gotten better, you know. Going through more things. It's funny because since I've been clean, it seems like I'm experiencing more stuff clean than I ever went through, or at least I'm aware of it, you know, than when I was using, you know. On my job, I'm just going through, I'm fortunate enough to get a career that I love, you know, and because of some people's personal things, I had to, like, file a complaint, equal opportunity stuff, and all that stuff that I hadn't gone, you know. I don't make complaints on jobs. People generally, you know, I'm the person that I had a job one time I was using. And it was because I'm a nerd addict. I don't know if there's any more nerd addicts in here. Working at a National Gallery of Art, right? I'm trying to downplay it. It was just a job. I used to love that job. I'm learning about Picasso and Monet and all this old good stuff. And but I was using on the weekends. They ain't need to know about all that. I was coming to work. They was like, he's such a nice mannered guy and this and that. You know, and I was until that day. That day I went in there and hey, my check didn't come with everybody else's check. You know, I don't know. Remember the Hulk? He was like, my friend was like, they probably was like, have you seen Chris? Shit. My check, my money? Oh, I went off in there. You know, man, I'm going out of town. I need my money. Yada yada and all this stuff, and they were scrambling and went all in the safe and gave me like $200 out of petty cash. I was like, all right then, you know, I'll take the $200, which was fine. So that to the next day when I showed up there, so I thought she was going out of town. I thought you said my check was going to come overnight. Yeah, we ain't talking about what I said. We talking about that damn funny look. Shoot. I wasn't surviving. That was pre-NA. Yeah, that was pre-NA. So anyway, so my job, I'm going through stuff now, but I don't have to handle situations like that anymore. You know, I have program has given me the tools to become a productive member of society. It has given me a reputation that speaks for itself. Mm-hmm. You know, I get commendations on my job. I don't get in trouble. You know, I told them, I said, which I probably could never do before, ask anybody you know that works here and ask them about me, you know. And nobody can say anything bad about me. So I'm, like, going through that. And my parents are going through a family thing. I have a brother in this journey that superseded me, or preceded me. That's how I learned out about Narcotics Anonymous. I went to his one-year anniversary, and just happy that he was finally getting his stuff together. Okay. You know, disregarding the fact I'm sleeping on my parents' sofa, I'm like 30, you know, complaining about, well, get up for what? I'm going to get up. know? So, but he got clean, and that's how I learned out about the program. So, I got this brother that's getting clean, but I have a brother that I pray for during the serenity, during the closing, you know, during that moment of silence. I pray for him. When I pray for me, I start by praying for him. You know, I wouldn't wish this on my worst enemy, you know, let alone somebody I love, right? So it's like dealing with that. My parents, my dad is 92 years old, and Alzheimer's is combined with his evil temper. You know, some of that has nothing to do with Alzheimer's. So when you get that together, you know, it's like a monster there. You know, I got a mother whose health can't handle his situation, you know, so after like 46, 47 years, she's in the process of leaving for her health, you know, and it's a real gray area to be in when you got somebody that hates your mom, and it's when you love two people that no longer love each other, you know. So like when my dad calls me like he did 2 days ago to take him to the supermarket, no matter what he does and says to my mother, I have to take him, you know, because the program has taught me to give back. You know, that's only, I can never give back the things I've taken from them, you know. So I take him to the supermarket, you know, and sit there while his 92-year-old ass be trying to pick up 12 cans of Coke, and I'm like, I got it. So I'm like, man. His emotions. Now, damn it, I still got muscles. You're 92, man. Let me get the thing, you know. So, take him home, and then I stop and I buy my mom something to eat on the way home, you know, and I give her that, you know, and I'm trying to deal with that. I'm getting married again.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we're not going to Vegas this time. It's real. I went to Vegas the last time. Called my sponsor. I'm like, look, I'm thinking about getting married. He's like, look, I don't have any experience with that. I'm going to refer you to my sponsor who's in a healthy marriage. I call him. He say, go to marriage counseling. I'm like, man, I already done bought these Vegas tickets. You know, so they said an addict in love is not open to suggestions.
Right.
You know, I wasn't. He was like, man, you should go to counseling and this and that and all that. I'm like, yeah, all right. Hung up with him, called this dude I knew that had just broke up or got back. Anyway, I called him. He was like, man, if you love her, marry. I'm like, my man. Went off to Vegas and we got married. You know. But not this time. What happens is this is somebody that gives me my medallion every year. We've been friends for 17 years.
Ouch.
You know, and I love her.
Come on, Chris.
I love her. And on the only reason I think it's taken me so long in the relationship is because I saw her down the line. And I didn't think I could measure up. I didn't want to take a risk, you know. And I came up with all types of excuses over the years. We just friends, you know, or this and that. Or I try to find something wrong with her. Man, she go like sometimes. Anything. So I ain't got to take a risk, you know, and... But I took a risk, man, and this is like beyond my wildest dreams, you know. I think that's the highest level of emotion, love. And I got somebody that's giving it to me unconditionally. Somebody loves me enough to allow me to miss the premarital class today to come here to share. You know, she was all right, yeah, you need to go down there and share before somebody else ass end up in Vegas. You know. Yeah, go right ahead. Yeah, look, I love you. Take your books. Take your little books with you. You know, I'm happy, man. I went to her parents. I asked them. I said, look, I have intentions of marrying your daughter. I went old school. I did it by the book. You know, I was like, her dad is just about 6'2", big. You know, she's a baby girl. He just kept saying, you know, that's my heart. So I was like, I'm going to be all right, I'm going to be good, you know. But they gave me their blessings because they see the person that you all have created. You know what I'm saying? And they gave me their blessing. I thought I was going to cry when I got to that. Yeah, I didn't. But we're in love, and we're planning this wedding. It's 28 days away. It's almost there. That's a standing treatment, man. 28 days. Shoot. I can handle 28 days. That ain't nothing. So, but we're on our way to that. So I got I'm preparing for a wedding. I have parents that are going through what they're going through, a brother that's in need of this program, and I haven't found it necessary to use. That's how we survive our emotions around here. You know, they say don't use no matter what. You know, I was like, this time, it's just funny because when you get a topic, most of the time you get a topic, you kind of think about what you're going to share, but like this is an everyday topic, survive my emotions. Every time something happens, I'm like, oh man, I got to survive these emotions. You know, and I'm just grateful. I remember my first convention here, coming here. My brother brought me down here. It was CPR CNA, I think I'm like 14. And coming up through the front door, and they had the hug squad people. And so I wasn't with all that hugging, so I made it a point to come in and out the side doors. You know, with the smokers all down that end. They must have got hit to that because they got hug people down there this year. I'm like, oh, somebody let the cat out the bag now. You know, but it wasn't so much that I didn't want to be hugged. I didn't know how to hug people back. Not this year. I came in the door like the girl said, why are you hugging? That's right. Give me some hugs, girl. Shoot. Don't hug me too long. I got 28 days. Woo. You know what I'm saying? I ain't exempt from making a bad decision. Shoot. One of them Ocean City decisions. Yeah. Shoot. It was my idea. I was like, look, when I got in a relationship, I was like, I had 2.5 years clean. When I got in a relationship, I was like, shoot, they say wait a year. I done waited 2.5, so technically they owe me like 2 relationships. 2 relationships and a newcomer. Yeah. I get something for them 6 months. Yeah, but I just want to leave here with my clean time. Shoot, I want to be able to go home and when she greet me, be able to look her in her eyes. I already told you, I'd be snitching on myself. I come in the door, she'd be like, I'm like, what? What you talking about? I ain't do nothing. You know, but no, I'm happy. I'm extremely. I cry most of the time when I think about the wedding and all that. I cry because I just never in my wildest dreams thought that I would be worthy of like somebody that good, a life this good, you know. But it's taking a whole lot of work, and it's taking the help of you people, my sponsor, the meetings, spiritual principles, prayer, you know, a combination of a whole lot of things. As a result, I'm becoming a healthier person. Somebody told me, I heard last year, he said, healthy people grow. When we grow, we change. Changing is challenging. And when we challenge, we rely on God. Relying on God is healthy. Healthy people grow. We grow, we change. Changing is challenging. When we challenge, we rely on God. Relying on God is healthy. Healthy people grow. You know, and that's kind of like the vicious, that's kind of like the cycle that I want to be in. So I want to thank you. I hope I stuck to the topic. I want to thank you for asking me to share, and I'll keep on going.
You know, Jan, I'm an addict. And I feel mad. This next young lady that I asked to come share on this topic, I saw this young lady in a group that I do a lot of service work in. It's called the 12 Noon New Hope Group at the Trust Clinic in Washington, D.C. If you have in our area, come out and visit us. We meet every Monday through Friday from 12 to 1 p.m. to help each other stay clean. And I saw this young lady on a regular basis in this meeting for a long time. And I for some reason, I was attracted to her spirit, even though we had never said anything to each other. I never heard her speak. And one day she came in the meeting on the day that I chair, And I was drawn to you that day, and I asked somebody, what's her name? And they said, I don't know. And I was like, well, go find out, because I'm one of them people that don't like asking people their names. I don't want y'all to know I don't know, okay? So found out her name, and I asked her, surprisingly, to come up and lead the meeting. And she did an excellent job, and I understood at that moment why God had placed you in my life when he did. Because though opposites attract, we are more alike than different. And your spirit is kind of like one of those spirits that give me hope, you know. And it's just the presence of who you really are that shines beyond anything that I could ever see, because I'm blind to goodness a lot of days, you know. And without any further ado, I give y'all Patty M., one of the most beautiful ladies I have met in this process.
Hi, everybody. My name is Patty. I'm a grateful recovering addict. And a Bama from North Carolina. Unlike Chris, I'm not nervous. I like this because I'm talking about me. And I got to be honest about me. And I got a lot of angels in here. And I'm going to say angels because surviving your emotions is about your spiritual conditioning. And the reason why I know that is because I've been through some things. And I had to have some people that were anchors in my life when I went through those things. And those people were people like my sponsor that's sitting out there looking at me with those big old cat eyes. Martina, raise your hand. And the reason I say that is, I'm going to speed my story up real quick. My mother is in the program, and I've been coming around the program for 30-some years, but I got 11 years. You hear that? So I'm sick, right? So I want y'all to think, looking at me, I got it going on. What you see ain't what you get. I'm sick. Y'all need to know that. And what happened for me was, being a Bama in North Carolina, I was a tomboy. I have one brother by my mother, and I grew up with my seven cousins. And we had a very private life. I grew up kind of like Seven-Day Venice. We didn't eat pork. So when I got a chance to eat a pixie, we hid it up under the bed, you know, when my uncle was gone, because we weren't allowed to have pork. Everybody in our family kind of suffered from high blood pressure. So what happened was I learned how to be defiant at an early age. My mother, when she lived in North Carolina, she was a bootlegger. So y'all got to kind of think about the atmosphere that I grew up in. Down in the country, bootlegging, you know what I'm talking about, Zantine? When they bootlegging, you know, they selling liquor and beer and some more stuff, and I'm meeting your husband, and your husband is meeting your wife, and everybody switch partners and stuff. And people dress up, and women wear high heels, and they fix their hair, and they look real pretty. And as a young girl, I looked at that, and I watched it for a long time, and I said, when I grow up, I want to be just like that. And I remember just watching, you know, because back in them days, see, I'm a 50s child. You could be seen, but you better not be heard.
That's right.
And my mother would have this look that she would give you across the room, and you was like, you knew what was up. So at an early age, like I said, I watched this, and I was drawn to this. And what happened was when my mother and my stepfather decided to move up here, they didn't bring me. They left me down there with my grandmother. And I just could not understand. You know, I felt abandoned. I felt there was something wrong with me. I didn't know what it was, but I just felt that they left because of me. I didn't know there was other things going on. And what happened, I got in a lot of trouble down there. When I say a lot of trouble, I started acting more like a girl instead of acting like a tomboy. And I started taking interest in guys. Because this young lady took me out one night, and she said, she had a can of beer, and she had a joint. And she said, drink this, and smoke this and watch me. And I was with this other young girl, and her name was Putin. And Putin and I, we were sitting in the back. Her name was Maxine. She was tall and pretty, just like you. And she took this guy back in the bedroom, right? And we didn't know nothing about no sex, because that was just not permitted. And she took this guy in the back, and there was no door in the room or whatever. And she had sex with this guy. And she was making all these moaning, ow, ow. And after smoking that joint, you know, I started looking. I said, dang. I looked at Putin, I said, that looked like that hurt. I ain't want none of that, because it looked like it was painful. So life went on, and my grandmother saw I was going to get in trouble. So she called my mother, she said, you better come get her. She hot in the pants. So they sent me up here. But the way they sent me up here was horrible. Coming from Carolina, Alabama, they put you on the bus. And they put a tag around it, telling folk where you're going. And I was coming to Washington, D.C., big old tag. Trailway bus station was downtown on New York Avenue. Now, I'm coming from the country. Now, it was dark. I mean, when it get night, it's dark. You don't see nothing. There ain't nobody out. And when I got up here off that bus, down Trailway bus station, it was all lit up. Kind of like Stevie Wonder saying that in his music, bright light. You know, I'm like, oh, my God, this New York. Then all of a sudden, I hear my grandmother saying, you know, take care of her, look after her. I raised her. I got up here. My mother sent me to junior high school over on 2nd and T Street. It was Langley Junior High School, right next to McKinley Tech in Washington, D.C. Rough area, y'all. Being a Bama, I came up here with clothes on like this. Flowers. You know, back in the 70s, it wasn't cool. They called me a Bama. And I remember going home telling my girlfriend, you know, I met these people, and they called me a Bama. They like me. She said, girl, Bama ain't no good thing. That mean you different. So I was mad at y'all. I said, whatever it takes to belong, I'm going to do whatever it takes. And I started doing what I saw y'all doing. Y'all hook class, I hook class. Y'all smoke reefer, I smoke reefer. Y'all drink a beer, I drink a beer. So I'm here to tell y'all that my addiction took off. Mine is associated with music, because it was music when it came to jukeboxes and selling alcohol. So my addiction kicked off from Parliament Funkadelic landed the mothership. Slip Malt Liquor introduced the bull. And the Doobie Brothers put a little funk in your Doobie. That's when my stuff took off. It was to the races. And I found this little club that I hung out at down West Virginia Avenue called the Skylark Inn. For those of you that don't know what this little club about, the place probably ain't no wider than this table. Somebody's always getting cut, thrown out, or something. But anyway, it felt like home. Now, I don't know if any of y'all been following what's going on TV1, but Roots has aired again 30 years later. And you remember when Kunta said he wanted to go home? I kind of felt like that. So I had to do what y'all did in order to feel like I was home. And the Skylark Inn made me feel like I was home. And there were men over there that looked at me and made me feel like I was a woman. Because for so long, I felt so bad about myself. And what I started doing was, I started getting myself in a circle where I met women. And the women started telling me, you know what, you're pretty. I never, ever in my life felt like I was pretty. Never. And I kept saying to myself, wonder what they see. Who they looking at? They talking to me? And then they told me about modeling. And I got into modeling. And I'm here to tell y'all that modeling world would take you through some things. You'll earn a lot of money. You have a lot of sex with a lot of different people. Either don't watch what you're smoking or what you're putting up your nose. And I'm here to tell you, I ain't staying that lifestyle long. I ain't staying it long. Because, see, then once you get in there and they see you got a pretty face, they want to see what else go with the face. And, see, I was one of those people, I was always ashamed of my body. Because I was told by my first husband that my chest looked like my back. So I was like, oh, I don't have no boobs. So I can't do that. And my nose, I had this great big nose, right? So they told me, they said, I remember applying with the Ford Modeling Agency. And they said, we don't like your look. Your look is too junior. That means I look like a kid. I got to go get my nose fixed. So I did one of Michael Jackson moves. I saved my money. I went and got my nose done. And when they put that cast on my nose, I couldn't wait till that thing healed. Girl, I had to go get high. I took that cast off my nose every Friday night. I had to go to chapter two. Yeah, I had to go to chapter two. Girl, we were doing the four corners, the click-clack. I had to go show off. New outfit. And I went over there and I took it off every Friday night. And you know what happened? When the nose healed, the damn thing crooked. Look at it. Look how crooked it is. I tried to get back in the mall and the man said, turn to the left. I looked at him, I'm like, I didn't want a Beyonce move. He must not know about me. So it didn't work. I couldn't get back in there because it didn't heal properly. So I decided to give up on the modeling thing. And I proceeded to hang out with my friends. And one thing led to another, and I started falling in love. And then I met the man of my dream, I thought. Almost my last year of high school. Brought him home. His name was Lawrence. I used to love myself some high yellow men. Ooh, high yellow. Damn near white. Don't give me that dog. No. Light me. Took it home, y'all. That thing was 9 years older than I was. I told my mama, I said, here, this my baby I met. She said, boo, if you want your daddy, he in there in the bed. I was humiliated. That was the first time I'd ever been humiliated. Couldn't understand that. I left, and I got high of those feelings because I couldn't deal with the fact that she didn't appreciate what I brought home. She wanted me out of her house, too. So I said, okay. But she told me. She said, ain't nobody having sex in here but me because I paid the rent. You want to have sex, get your own place. That's the kind of family I grew up with. So what happened? I said, okay, I'll fix her. I'm throw away these birth control pills. I'm going to have me a baby. I got pregnant. She said, if you ever get pregnant in my house, I'm going to put you out. I said, I don't believe her. I got pregnant. She put me out, y'all. When my mama said she was going to do something, she did it. I'm just like Forrest Gump now. My mama said she did it. She put me out, so I had no other option. I looked at this man, and I said, you know what? We got to get married. And we got married, and we had another child. And he became my best get-high partner. And then, like I said, I was already introduced to the Skylark Inn, and then I met this lady that lived in my building that took me back to the Skylark Inn. Then I woke up. I said, you know what? I can't party and be married, too. Somebody got to go. It's time for me to go. So when he went to work, I packed up all my stuff. And I left him a Bible on the pillow with a note that said, you need to pray. I'm gone. I left just like that. I ain't had no time for that. I had to leave. We're talking about emotions here. I got caught up with a feeling, and I couldn't let go. And I'm here to tell y'all, I searched for that feeling for a long, long time. I went through some things trying to chase that first feeling I got when I got here. And what happened was, I left that marriage. When I left that marriage, like I said, my addiction kicked off. Alcohol led me into some doors I had never went into before. And y'all know what happened? I cracked up. I met crack. Yes, I did. And I bought rocks in some unusual places. There was a place in D.C. called Mayfair. For any of y'all that don't know, the place was not fair. They call it Mayfair, but it wasn't fair because I bought things like real soap, real rocks, a breadcrumb. And I would go home. You know how you had that jittery feeling, you know, you just get anticipation, you done bought it. You can't wait to get home to put it on the pipe to hit it. And I put the breadcrumb on the pipe. And I hit it. And my wig caught on fire. I'm telling y'all that because do you know how you feel when you spend your last dime on a piece and it ain't real? You got that dumb look on your face. Like, no, they didn't. Wig all singed up. Eyelashes gone. And the look of desperation. And that's that same little commercial like here on TV applied in my life then. Not another day. Not another day. But one more time, I kept doing it over and over and over again. I'm the kind of addict that will continue to work because I don't want nobody telling me when I can get out. See, I like playing Janet Jackson. I like having control. So men think that they choose us, but we choose our victim. Well, we look you over way before you ever step our way. We know what we're getting into when we open the door. And see, I'm the type of person, I take a person in, you bait them real good. Especially if you got a job that pays well. Then once you get them in, it's do as I say. Not as I do. You can't do what I do. But see, then I met somebody that did like I did and didn't do what I said. And this was a guy that I had known all my life. And for the sake of it, his last name is Miller. We called him Miller Time. And what happened was, we got married. This is the second marriage. And here I am, you know, we're coming to meetings, and I got all these years up under my belt. I got 6 years. I'm sponsoring people. And Miller Time just wouldn't act right. Miller Time did what he wanted to do, when he wanted to do it. But since I was the one that had the image, I covered up his tracks. He wrecked the car, I buy another. He get locked up, I get him out. But you didn't know about it. I come in the meeting, you ask me how I do. I'm doing fine. How you doing? I'm doing fine, baby. How you doing? You need me to sponsor you? Are we going to the dance this weekend? It was just like that. Faking. But I'm here to tell y'all, there's no future in front. Not in this program. Because the mask will be snatched off your face. And what happened was, see, I got another addiction, too. It's another meeting. It's called gambling. Some of y'all might know what that means, right? When you spend, when you ain't got no business spending, gambling on something you ain't got no business gambling on. You can put a number on whatever it is you want to. But anyway, what happened was, these feelings, the emotional feelings I had inside about controlling something that I couldn't control bothered me. And it was more important to me how I looked to you than the way I felt in the inside. And I'm saying that to say, your emotions is about the inside. So I was concerned about how I looked to y'all. So when he messed up, I covered up. I fronted when I shouldn't have. And what happened was, one day I came home, me and my sponsor had hung out. I had celebrated my 6-year anniversary. I came in the house and wasn't nobody there. I shut the door and it was like, you know, empty feeling. I ain't getting old. I'm like, where's he at? No, I know what he do. That's all right. I'm going to show him. 6 years, y'all. You know, you would think you forget where to get it from. But trust me, I called my old hat partner. I said, girl, come on over here. I want to get happy. She said, no, you just celebrated your anniversary. I said, I got $1,000. She said, I'll be right over. She took me to this place where this man's mother was upstairs. She was an invalid. And we were down in the basement. And I was down there, I was telling them people about it. I just celebrated 6 years and how good the program is. And the guy looked at me like he's looking right. He was chewing on telling me that. And nobody cares about those 6 years. Girl, put that thing on that pot pack. And just that fast, y'all, I had lost my time in here. Because I put another piece on the pot and I smoked it. And I covered up. And when I went home, I didn't feel good. And I called my sponsor and told my sponsor what I did. My sponsor come running over there. She said, what's this thing you done made? What is it? An aspirin bottle and a straw and a... What the hell is it? See, she ain't know nothing about smoking crack. On a made, homemade pot, good homemade. She tore my shit up. I was mad. I'm like, no, she... Oh, sorry. No, she didn't. Because, see, she's a dope fiend, and I like crack. I like cracking up. So what she told me was, she said, what the hell happened? I tried to explain to her what happened. She was very disappointed in me. And I remember I tried to get back on the track, and I remember my mother coming over. I was in the bed. I had a cover all up over my head. I told my mother, I said, you know what? I feel like just rolling in a hole or something. And just dying. She say, huh. And see, my mother not one of them people that's going to give you titty. If that's what you're looking for, don't come to my mother. She say, girl, you better take your foot out your ass. You're going to need that leg to stand on. So immediately, what do? I pick up the phone. I dial a friend of mine down in the Georgia area. Her name is Doreen P. I told her what I had done. She said, you know what? You was woman enough to do that. Be woman enough to come back in these rooms. Tell these people what you did. Let them help you patch your life back together. I did that. Along with my sponsor I have there. Martina, I love you. You're one of those anchors I talk about that God has put in my life. You've been through a whole lot with a crazy person like me. And I thank you for being in my life. Now let me move on just real quickly here. You know, what happened was, like I said, wanting to control stuff, I came on one day. That man I love, I mean, love the man so much. You ever love somebody so much that no matter what they do, no matter what they do, it's okay? That's insanity. Y'all crazy, just like me. Well, anyway, that man I love so much, I went to wake him up. He was dead. I found out that he was speedballing. He was dead. In the bed. I had to call my sponsor one more time. And I remember my sponsor said, you know what? Hardest thing you're going to have to do is learn how to live with you. But one more time. How do I survive my emotions after death of my husband in our bed, in our home? I know what you do. See? When you think of a crazy thought, you don't take a crazy thought to a sane person. I wouldn't go back to my sponsor with a crazy thought and say, well, look, I'm having this thought. No. I need to do what Chris did. I need to find another stupid person like me, run it past them so they can put the stamp of approval on it, so it don't sound so bad when I do it. So my head said, you need another hostage. So I went seeking for another hostage. And I found one, and I held it for a while. But I'm here to tell y'all, you will let go when the pain gets great enough, and you see that no matter what you do, it don't change. Every day you come home, and it's like, it ain't changed. It's still the same. Because what God makes crooked stays crooked. And spiritual matters don't make intellectual sense to an idiot. And I was an idiot. Because I tried to make something fit that didn't fit. And thanks be to God, and I have to say that because I found myself at a point in my life where I knew that the only way I could survive was to pray and ask God to take away the pain. God, you sent somebody my way. And even though I still go through ups and downs, that's a part of life. What I have to do is not lean on my understanding, but understanding of the anchors that God has put in my life. And when I say anchors, He will put different people, different times, different places in your life to help you along the way. But you have to be open-minded in order to receive it. And what has happened for me, December 13, 2006, I got married for the third time in Barbados. And the guy that I'm married to now, I didn't go out looking for this guy. I went to a birthday party, somebody invited me, and I met this guy over some pork and beans. See, I'll be 50 this year. I got two kids, and let me add this in here about the children. When your kids are grown, y'all need to leave them alone. You know, I get tired of coming to meetings and people talking about my son, my daughter. I was raised with a strong woman. Leave their ass alone. They homeless, send them to the shelter. They ain't got no food, show them where the soup line is. Because my son, when he turned 18 and he graduated from high school, I said, you got to go somewhere. I don't know where, but you're going to leave my house. And he said, well, where am I going to go, Ma? So I was looking around and said, you know what? You're going to go to the Navy. That's what you're going to do. I enrolled him in the Navy, sent him away, had a big party for him. Gee, 15 days, they were calling me. Miss Miller, we're sending your son home on the next flight. He stayed there 15 days. That's a shorter time than Riddick Bowe did when he signed up. My daughter, who is now married with two kids, said, Ma, I just need to stay in the house for 6 months. Just let's save enough money so we can get a house and we'll move out. She moves in with one child. Then they have two kids. And then husband keeps getting bigger. Food is gone. Using my car. And 6 months turns into, 2 years? And you know what I said? You know what? I'm going to sell this house. That's what I'm going to do. I'm selling. I sold my house. I moved to an apartment. They had to find one then. And I'm saying that to say sometimes we got to let go in order for people to grow. And that's in all areas of our lives. Not just our husband, our wife, but our kids, our friends. I'm one of those people that will let you dump. But you know what? I found out today from my sponsor that I'm not a trash can. And I ain't got to keep letting you dump your shit on me. If you don't want to clean up your side of the street, don't bring it on my side. I will show you where to get some help. If you don't want the help, leave me alone. Now, let me tell you something. Life ain't easy. But tell you what, it ain't no better either while you putting your stuff on me. I am not Alice. I can't carry the world on my shoulders. I got enough stuff on my own shoulders that I got to carry to somebody else. But if you go to meetings, if you go to step meetings, you'll learn how to incorporate the steps in your life to help you go through life so you don't have to run to somebody else having a pity party. And when you have a pity party, you got to tell everybody about your pity party. Let me tell you what he did to me. But I'm here to tell you one thing. If you keep coming back, this thing will work for you, just like it worked for me. I'm coming up on my 12th year, June 5th, but by the grace of God. I just got the 5-minute rule, so I'm going to say my last three things in closing. There's a movie that everybody know I love, and it's called Forrest Gump. Forrest Gump says, stupid is as stupid does. Forrest says, life is like a box of chocolates. You never know what you're going to get. And I'm here to tell you that this program is like the Washington Post. If you don't get it, you just don't get it.